All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, December 13th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zommers is here as well. He has been a little more nervous than usual because he knows that I've had quite the cough overnight, and at any point the voice could just go away, and then Aaron at that point is going to regale people for the rest of the 7 o'clock hour with tales of life in Manitowoc. You'll be like, Manitowoc would be like your Lake Wobegon to our audience.
Yeah, I could do that, or more likely I'll just play you'll just hear Pat from yesterday. And okay, like, yeah, I said, or earlier, reruns. You'll just be confused. And
yeah, there you
yeah
exactly. All right, coming up this hour, Hans Breitenmoser will tell us about the rural economy priorities that were set at last weekend's annual Wisconsin Farmers Union Convention. And Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio will join us a little later in the hour as well. You can reach us and take some of the stress off my voice by giving us a call at 844-967-2789. That's toll-free, or to use the Up North number, 715-388-7155. And again, for Up North News, you can follow us at upnorthnewswi.com or on social media. Look for Up North News WI. Just don't forget the WI. I was remiss, again, for being a bit under the weather of bringing back the audio from the debate for governor, where Tim Michaels basically called Wisconsin, you know, lazy, said that the pandemic had created a new generation of lazy people in Wisconsin, and that he was a hardworking guy who was going to be able to, you know, get other people to get back to work. And we've heard other Republicans talk about the need to basically really, my word, screw over people who are newly unemployed so that they just take any job, whatever crumbs, you know, somebody offers, rather than take the time to get on their feet and look for the job that is best for them and best for their long-term prosperity. Do you have what Michael said back in the debate there, Aaron?
We're going to get people off of their couches and get them back to work. We created an entire class of lazy people during COVID, and it's time to get them back engaged in our economy, to stop just sending them the unemployment checks, the COVID subsidy checks, which I know are now gone, but they were getting them, and that's how they got lazy.
Yeah, it was that $1,400 in a check that made them lazy and jobless. It was then explained to Tim Michaels that Wisconsin has never had more people at work and has never had fewer people unemployed as a percentage of the workforce. Wisconsin is working. Wisconsinites are working like never before. But demographics were already working against us with the baby boom. And then the pandemic, the folks that it didn't kill, well, it led many in older age brackets to retire, maybe earlier than they planned, but that's still their right. But Tim Michaels was going to be the one to whip these lazy people into shape, because he, like he said in a Milwaukee radio interview recently, he said he left it all on the field. Maybe not quite. Dan Bice has a story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that says that, you know, people are not really buying Michaels' description of his work ethic, including sources who work closely with the Republican Party nominee in the months leading up to his loss to Governor Evers on November 8th. These folks provided the Journal Sentinel with a copy of certain days from the Michaels campaign internal calendar of campaign events for late October, early November. Many of the days appear to be light with activities for a statewide candidate. Most of the events on the calendar were in and around Waukesha County, where Michaels lives. This from private records that about 30 people had access to, Bice writes. Here's an example. A lot of it is just dropping in at bars. For example, on November 6th, 2 days before the general election, Michaels was scheduled to leave his home at 11:20, go watch a Packers watch party at Pop's Pub, then at halftime, go to a Packer party at DJ's Goalpost Sports Bar and Grill, Menominee Falls, and be back home by 4:15. 3 days earlier, Michaels didn't start his day till 11:45 a.m. with stops in Middleton and DeForest and a final event at a bar in Richfield in Waukesha County, or Washington County, rather. On October 31st, which was a Monday, Michaels started his day by going to Watertown at 12:30 in the afternoon, followed by a meeting in Dodge County and a final event at a bar in Washington County. And the schedule had him home by 5:30. And then there are more examples in here. There are frustrations, many of them anonymous, but some folks did make note that former Governor Tommy Thompson, who was an early supporter of Michaels, didn't feel like doing just three or four events a day was enough to knock off Evers. One source said to Dan Bice that Thompson confronted Michaels about the issue at one point, and Michaels reassured Thompson that he was putting in the necessary hours. The source close to Thompson said, "You can't run for governor and not be putting in 12 to 15 hours a day when you're the challenger. You have to work extremely hard. You have to be doing more than three or four events in order to hopefully defeat the incumbent." That source said that Thompson believed that Michaels thought he had the race in the bag. And recall he said in the radio interview that he had heard the same thing from former President Donald Trump and many others who said that he, again, had the race in the bag. The article just paints a picture of a guy coasting who thought that he was going to, you know, win this thing. He watched Ron Johnson win. Ron Johnson did a 10-day statewide bus tour, 60 stops, 3,000 miles. Brian Stile joined him, Florida Senator Rick Scott, RNC Chair Rona McDaniel. Tim Michaels was offered, but only made one or two stops on the road. Got to get back home, you know. We'll have more after this on Up North News Radio. Ooh, we get two from Taylor Swift on her 33rd birthday, huh? I didn't have you pegged as a Swiftie there, Aaron.
Well, my sisters were when she was, you know, real. I mean, she's big now, but when she was first really big. So I know a lot of the songs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't, especially 1989, the, you know, just the mega album. I suppose you can't help but do that. We have been talking at times this morning about Republicans who are now, maybe it's not fair to say at war with one another, but there certainly is much more than the usual amount of backbiting after a midterm. Dick's on the line to talk more about people who maybe should have known earlier or did know earlier that Trump wasn't going to be the best thing for the Republican Party. Dick, good morning.
Good morning. I had the extreme pleasure of meeting Bill Krause. I don't know if you ever met him. Mm-hmm. Republican operative, and he's now gone, unfortunately, but way back in early 2016, I remember him telling me that he told Tommy Thompson, stay away from this guy. He is toxic. I'm talking about Trump now. Just stay away from him. You know, and this was before any of these people came on board, and then, of course, they did, and the rest is all history. And then you look at this nonsense now. I mean, it's to me, I just don't understand the Republican Party at all anymore. They've been totally held hostage by this guy, and he's done nothing but lose for them. And yet, they stand in line and marching orders, whatever he says, do it. And they're just marching off a cliff. They're just crazy. But I don't know. He saw through this many years ago, and he just... It was just interesting to get a perspective from somebody who'd been around politics that long.
And Dick, are you as puzzled as I am that it appears, according to news reports, that Rona Romney McDaniel is about to be reelected chair of the Republican National Committee, even though she has yet to preside over the National Republican Party during a winning cycle? I mean, she just keeps being rewarded for failure. This is somebody Trump made her take Romney out of her name, you know, rather than, you know, she had to basically disavow her family name, and yet she's going to win another term as Republican chair. It is baffling.
Yeah, and you know, and then the likes of a Marjorie Traitor Green, I call her. I'm sorry, that was so out of bounds what she said this weekend that she should be, you know, thrown right out of the country. As far as I'm concerned, let alone you know, having the voice she has in a major political party. She's crazy.
It really is. And again, at some point, maybe history will answer some of these questions for us. But, you know, I recall I was not living in the country at the time. It was part of my 3 years away in 2016. And people would ask me all the time, what's up with this Donald Trump gaining popularity? And I said, I honestly don't know. But, you know, I hope we find out. But I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for checking in with us today. Republicans have got to, apart from not, you know, rigging the map or undermining election integrity, perhaps maybe if they get back to some of the kitchen table issues, they would have more successful elections on a level playing field. They spent a lot of time talking about inflation. They have spent zero time since then talking about what they might do about it. They've talked about crime during the election to scare voters, have said very little of what they want to do about it. Here's what they've talked about instead. Banning TikTok. Congressman Mike Gallagher, Republican from Green Bay, says he's planning to introduce a bipartisan bill that would ban TikTok nationwide. He said on WISN-TV's Upfront over the weekend, we're going to make the case this is something we vote on pretty early in the next Congress. There's a lot of Republican support. We're slowly bringing on Democratic colleagues. The more people learn about the company that controls TikTok, the more concerns they have, end quote. TikTok is owned by a Chinese company, ByteDance, which has increasingly concerned U.S. intelligence officials. Well, some U.S. intelligence officials, and there are more states where Republican lawmakers in those states are talking about banning TikTok, at least from government devices, if not banning the outright use of it. But even as states bring it up, again, as a convenient way to look like they're being tough on China, not everybody involved in tech security necessarily agrees. Or at least what they're saying is that TikTok, yes, may have some data privacy concerns, but so do a ton of the apps that we use. We put a lot of things on our phone and on our computers that we really don't know where all it goes. I mean, those terms and conditions, I mean, you can't, if you printed them out on a roll of toilet paper, you'd need a 12 pack to get all the T&C on there, but we just all check the box and let it go. And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot that seems specific to TikTok other than that the company, you know, may be very close to the Chinese government. Well, go figure. It's an authoritarian regime. And we're not going to get too deep in the weeds on it today, but at some point we will come back and talk about where we stand with China. I saw a report just this morning in the New York Times that while Republicans have been trying to paint President Biden as being weak on China, the reality is that he's been as tough or tougher than Trump, and possibly to the detriment of future U.S. trade relations, but that may be a risk that you have to take in order to not let, you know, the Chinese government take advantage of the U.S. in global trading. But to bring it back to TikTok, Aaron, it begs the largest question of all about it, and that, what is TikTok for?
Well,
I honestly don't. I've made one or two videos, but beyond that, I keep coming back to it. And Aaron, I'm telling you, I'm flipping channels on a TV with a bunch of stations that, you know, I'm not really getting.
Yeah, it's a very strange place because it used to be Musical.ly, which was a place for 12-year-olds to make their own music videos and lip sync to songs. And then after Vine closed down and TikTok was reborn and revitalized, it just replaces Vine, but has its own new culture that is strange and alien to me.
I thought, just for fun, I'm gonna bring it up. Here's a bunch of kids doing kind of a gyrating dance with their teacher about gossip in the classroom. Let's see what else we got here. Here are some people dancing. Here's some people watching TV. Here's somebody standing in the street. Here's a clip from a comedy show. Look, I'm not trying to sound completely like an old man here, but what I'm getting at is, while some people really love the platform, I'm not seeing that this is a thing a member of Congress needs to be spending a whole ton of time on. If you want to talk about data privacy and data security, those are worthy issues, but TikTok alone, it just seems to be a goofball platform where I'm not putting my credit card number in there.
From what I understand, you can cultivate it. It just takes a while of going through and just throwing away stuff you don't like and anything that's kind of related to the kind of subject you want to be in, liking that. But even still, if you find, I don't know what politicians are doing on TikTok that they need to find. Like, is it just political stuff? Because then I feel like just use Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, there are concerns overall when it comes to, you know, apps about China's potential, it says here, to manipulate technology such as satellite location, digital currency, and other aspects of the internet. But that this is something that is, you know, that you could find those concerns just as easily in what Facebook is harvesting from us. And so, you know, when Trump was president, he had threatened to ban TikTok from the U.S., but those efforts came to nothing. And Biden has said the threats posed by China-based apps should be evaluated through a rigorous and evidence-based analysis. And that's, again, all fine and good, but I just don't know that is the, you know, the very best use of our time. All right, let's see here. A Wisconsin middle school in Manitowoc closed on Friday after a student and a teacher were bitten by spiders.
Yep. I have more information on this too, but
dozens of yellow sack spiders have been found at Wilson Middle School in Manitowoc, according to a letter from the principal. Exterminators were called in, and Fox 11 up in Green Bay reported more than 30 spiders had been killed by Friday morning. The superintendent said that classes at the school were dismissed early Thursday after a student was bit. The student brushed the spider off, but the bite area became itchy and swollen. A school nurse provided attention. A teacher was also bitten by the spider and needed attention for swelling, itching, and pain. A letter sent to parents advises that yellow sac spider bites are not lethal, but can be painful and resemble an allergic reaction. They don't know how the spiders got in the school, but they're glad that exterminators have come and taken care of the issue. Wasn't expecting that story.
Yeah. I found out about that and brought it up on Todd's show on Friday. One of my friends in Manitowoc is a substitute teacher at Wilson, like a long-term sub. And it turns out that they may not have been completely honest about all of that. The administration knew about the spiders for about a week. And, yes, the student was bitten on Thursday. But I believe, according to that friend, two teachers, not just one, were bitten. But that might be inaccurate. However, the time frame is that they did know about the spiders for about a week and were thinking, oh, there's pretty nasty chemicals with the exterminators. We don't want to mess with that. And then they just took too long to take action. And then a student was hurt.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I mean, again, of the things I expect to hear coming out of schools, especially a spider I'd never heard of. Hey, a reminder, you can watch Up North News Radio online through Facebook. Go to the Up North News Facebook page or Bull Falls Radio Facebook page in Wausau. And you can also follow us as a podcast. Subscribe at all the usual podcast sites, including Apple and Spotify, or at our website here at the radio station, civicmedia.us, where you can click on any of the shows and get a podcast feed of what we've got going there. All right, let's set up our next segment here, because we'll come out of the break and listen back to an interview I recorded late yesterday with Hans Breitenmoser, our friend from up in Lincoln County, a farmer up near Merrill, who we visit with every couple of weeks or so to talk about various matters that affect rural families and the rural economy. It was especially noteworthy to visit with him this week, right on the heels of the Wisconsin Farmers Union annual convention, where they not only, you know, elect leadership for the new year, but they also set priorities in terms of the things that they want to convey to their elected officials in the legislature and in Congress about what they should be doing on behalf of Wisconsin's rural families, not just farmers, but producers, everybody in small towns across the rural landscape who support that rural economy, which is such a big component to the state's total economy. So Hans will talk to us about that coming up right after this break here on Up North News Radio. Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow. We're back on Up North News Radio. Hans Breitenmoser joins us from up in the Merrill area. Hans, how are you?
I'm well, Pat. How are you doing?
Great, great. Thanks. You were taking part recently in the Wisconsin Farmers Union annual convention. Where was that? Where was that held at?
That was at the lovely Chula Vista Resort in lovely Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin.
Ah, yes, lovely indeed. And so there was a lot of talk about policy and about priorities as well as leadership. I hope I'm not blindsiding you with this, but do you have a rough idea of the membership of Wisconsin Farmers Union?
Boy, that's a good question. I know that it's in talking with staff, the last couple of years have been hard on the organization because of COVID. So like so many other organizations, people not being able to get together in person, we struggled with that. But prior to that, the membership had been growing quite a bit. For an organization who at one point was darn near dead, it had lost so many members. So even though we're losing a lot of dairy farmers in Wisconsin, which is definitely an issue that Farmers Union is concerned about, over the years, we've gained a lot of producers like, CSA vegetable types and, different types of, it's just a different demographic now. It's changing than it has been historically.
Well, sure. It's just that there's always a natural evolution in all things, farming certainly among them. And what I gleaned from some of the reports from there is, I'm putting this into my words. Yeah, there's a lot of corporate farming out there and it's growing. But you know what? There are still a ton of family farmers out there and they've got priorities and they've got things they want from their elected officials. And so that's kind of what you all talked about at the convention this weekend. Is that kind of it?
Yeah. Yep. We spent, that's sort of Farmers Union's focus is family farms and trying to keep, the economics of farming in good enough shape where families can make a living off the land, for its own sake, but also to keep, rural communities vibrant and sustainable. We need, individual small businesses and these small farms to continue.
Exactly. And now you kind of touched on one or two of the issues that were made a priority. And I know we've talked about this one previously about competition and monopoly power, but I agree with you that it hasn't received nearly the attention it should, especially from policymakers and voters. So we're going to come back to it again. Why is it that anti-competitive practices was cited by the Farmers Union as a priority? What is it that we want our elected officials to know about what needs to be done differently?
Well, anti-competitive practices are just that, right? They're anti-competitive, and who ends up getting pushed out usually is the little guy. And so I think it should be it's logical that it should be the purview of government to make sure that there are level playing fields out there so that small businesses can survive and small farms can survive. And so, it's always been Farmers Union's opinion and prerogative to seek monopolies where they exist and point them out as being monopolies and point them out as being uncompetitive, because if we allow these types of things to flourish, it's bad for consumers and it's bad for producers. And when it's bad for producers, it's also bad for rural economies in general. So that's why Farmers Union has always made that a priority.
Two things that are a bit related were cited as well. One is the changing climate, and then another is clean water. Now, you know, a changing climate is something that's happening on a global scale, but that doesn't mean there aren't things that we can do in Wisconsin and do at the farm level about that. And of course, clean water should be self-explanatory, Hans, but there's so many different threats to clean water in Wisconsin. I think it's a real big thing that Wisconsin Farmers Union is making that a key priority for discussion with our elected officials, that, you know, we can't take clean water for granted.
Yeah, absolutely, Patton. And you know, the interesting thing is that we have to continue to have these conversations, because as obvious as you would think that would be, there needs to be political will and so forth to get that done and to make sure that we do the right thing, whether, you know, as farmers or as industry or as consumers. How do we treat the water? How do we treat these natural resources? And so that's again, that's always been a priority of Wisconsin Farmers Union. And I suspect it will continue to be, because, you know, like you said, we can't take clean water for granted. So I think Farmers Union has been on the forefront, and a lot of producers have been on the forefront of trying to figure out, you know, what best practices are and to, you know, improve these watersheds. So a lot of work has been done with that.
Well, because again, a lot of smaller family sized farms, you know, want to be good stewards of the land, but best practices sometimes takes, you know, some changes or takes some equipment that can be rather pricey. And Wisconsin can show a leadership role in helping families afford to make changes that are better for the environment.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is education. I think when you get to the larger sized farms, obviously their potential to have a larger impact for good or bad is there. But I don't want to exclude the larger farms in this. There have been some real good examples of larger farms that are doing a good job. And one of the things they're able to do in terms of, you know, spreading those costs over more cows in the dairy example, you know, can in fact be helpful. But there's a lot of education that has to happen. You know, historically in Wisconsin, we didn't do a lot of cover crops. Well, now we're getting more into the cover crops. We haven't done a lot of no-till. We're getting more into that. The changing climate ironically helps in that, as it extends that growing season so that you can put in some winter rye after corn silage. I'm getting pretty far into the weeds here. I don't want to nerd out on you, but so some of these practices just haven't been done and are now more being adopted. And I think the other thing is just the carbon market itself, educating farmers on what the carbon market is, because it's new and it's kind of scary and it's this weird ambiguous kind of, okay, you can, you know, there's a market for something that's not very tangible, like a bushel of corn is, or 100 pounds of milk. So there's a lot of moving parts. So the education needs to happen and is happening mercifully to get farmers to invest in some, to embrace these best practices.
Let's get to something that is really foundational in farming whenever it involves livestock. And that is, handling the manure that comes from it. We read about the legal action that's being brought over in Kewaunee County, which has had a terrible problem with manure being spread, you know, too much of it into tributaries that feed into Lake Michigan. And the crux of at least one of the cases deals with an accusation that paperwork was falsified about, you know, how much manure was spread and in what conditions. And I'm bringing all this up to you, Hans, to make the point that there are ways to do proper, you know, manure management, but you got to follow the rules, from, you know, the rules on the ground to the rules on the paper.
Absolutely. 100%. And again, I don't mean to pick on large producers, but the larger the producers become, the more manure they have to deal with, the more, the manure has to travel farther down the road to get applied to the land. And so that concentration of animals kind of raises that bar, you know, and there has to be, you know, the documentation and so forth that goes along with it. Most, again, you know, like on our farm, we've had a nutrient management plan for years. The idea is that, you know, manure is a resource. It's a great resource, but if used improperly, obviously it can be a pollutant, no different than, you know, so many other things that we see in society, too much of a good thing can be a bad thing, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever. So yeah, I think, you know, whether you're a large producer or a small producer, you have to do a good job with this resource so that you can get the most out of it. And that relates then, you know, to sort of, you know, other things like, for example, the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus one is purchasing to apply to one's land to grow a good crop. So if we manage that manure properly, we're going to have a better, you know, a better results in terms of yields. We're going to have less of an impact in terms of, you know, issues with water quality. And it's also a climate issue, right? Because if we can manage that manure properly, there's less fertilizer that has to get produced, shipped, and spread, and all the other things. So manure is a wonderful thing, but it's only as good as the operator.
One other note I read that was discussed in terms of policy priorities was education. And thank goodness, because whenever we talk about, you know, the rural economy and farming and everything, sometimes I feel like we have to remind some folks that, you know, farmers send their kids to school as well. And then even the smallest towns, they deserve good schools. They deserve really good teachers. It's something that was important and talked about, you know, in our last hour with Jess Piper from Dirt Road Democrat out in Missouri, that you can't talk about rural priorities without making sure that, you know, whether you're going to be a farmer or, you know, go to med school after you come off the farm, you need a great foundational education wherever you are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's another, you know, I had sort of the same conversation over the weekend as well. You know, we used to all agree in this country that, you know, a good public education was worth funding because it was the great equalizer. And it didn't matter where you were in the state, that, you know, whether it was urban, suburban, rural, we all decided that, hey, let's invest money in our children. And now we've become so, you know, tribalized in our politics that that's getting in the way. But also then, again, just sort of, I'm going to say poor management from the state level. If we're not sharing revenue, if these dollars aren't going back to communities that need them to invest in education, well, then what happens? You know, then these school districts have to go to referendum. And oftentimes the people in those districts have been, you know, just so convinced that any tax dollars is, you know, too many tax dollars. And so, you know, there's just not the investment that should be happening in these rural schools. And again, I speak of rural because I, you know, that's where I live. But whether they're rural or urban, man, I don't see how you can logically argue against investing money in good public education for our children, for crying out loud. That seems like it should be fairly straightforward, regardless of your politics.
Especially as Senator Kelda Royce told us yesterday here on the program, you can no longer use the excuse we can't afford it, because we have built up a surplus that can be put to work the right way. Exactly.
Well, and that, you know, that can't afford it excuse, that's such a tired old trope. I mean, you know, when the economy grows every year and there are dollars being produced, Pat, but you got to follow them. And where are they going? And, you know, at the risk of going all Bernie Sanders on you already this morning, it's like, come on, man. You know, when you've got such a small percentage hanging on to that much cash, the money has been created. It's not that it doesn't exist. It's just misallocated.
Hans Breitenmoser from up in Lincoln County. Always good to talk to you. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
My pleasure, Pat. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Always nice to visit with Hans and find out about what is happening with the Wisconsin Farmers Union and what folks are talking about. And if you missed it in our last hour, we did have a great conversation with Jess Piper, who is starting a new podcast called Dirt Road Democrat. She ran for legislature in Missouri, where it is so deeply read there. As an educator, met so many people who she knew, or she knew them. They know that she taught their children, but heard all manner of things that made her realize that there is an information glut or a misinformation glut, and there is such a need to spread more fact-based information, shall we say, and progressive values. And while, yes, a lot of people in rural parts of the country are vocal about you know, their right-wing stance, there are still plenty of people, starting with women this year, upset about the Dobbs decision, who are just looking for that conversation, looking for somebody to reach out to them and explain the issues, explain where their progressive values are based, and help folks understand that rural folks are being, you know, used at election time, but then abused by Republicans who don't fight for them once they get into office. We'll visit with Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio next on Up North News Radio. She thinks my tractor's sexy. Anybody under the Civic Media roof that covers prep sports quite like Chad Holmes of Bull Falls Radio. He does other things too on this little talk show he does in the afternoons, and we love to talk about that in a visit with him every so often. Chad, how are you?
Doing good, Pat. How are you doing?
Doing all right. We're coming in on fumes here. It's been quite the lingering head cold, but you know, again, any landing you can walk away from. So we're going to try to do that here as we end. I was talking to Aaron earlier about, you know, it's very rare that I put on my glasses all those years in TV, provided just enough vanity that I will try to wear contacts till the bitter end. And yet then I remember, you know, there's Aaron looking good in his glasses. There's you. You've got an entire show logo based on you wearing headphones and glasses. So I'm really not in a position to complain here.
You learn as you get a little older, maybe the vanity has to go away. And I was like you for many, many years. I'd always wear my contacts in public settings. And then all of a sudden, doggone it, my eyes feel better when I'm not wearing my contacts all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It does raise this interesting point about marriage, though, and watch as I kind of trip my way through this minefield. I think that when I first got this particular set, which is a, you know, pretty heavy, darker frame compared to the wire frames I'd had for the longest time, and when my wife said, "Oh, they look really good. You should get these," I thought she was joking, you know, because I to me they're kind of a throwback, you know, to the 70s or you know, other nerdly things. But I'm not asking so much about the glasses, but about the interesting dynamic where you want to put up a picture, either social media, Christmas card or whatnot, and your spouse says, "Oh no, I look terrible in it." Even though you think the spouse looks great in it. And it works the other way too, where, you know, she's put up photos of me like in my glasses or something else. I'll be like, "Oh my God, how could you do that? I look like Jabba the Hutt in this." And then, you know, she gets upset and says, "No, you look great in that." And I think it's one of those weird couple dynamics. I don't know if they all go through, but it strikes me as so puzzling sometimes how a spouse will see themselves one way versus the way their spouse sees them in photographs.
And it's also timing, isn't it? What is the mood of the day? What are you feeling inside? What are you looking at when you look at yourself that day? I think it has a lot about, you know, the old saying, timing is everything. Timing is everything.
It sure is. So I want to get to what you've been covering in terms of prep sports and the talk show as well. One sports note I wanted to pass along here before we wrap things up. The Brewers are receiving all-star catcher William Contreras as part of a three-team deal with Oakland and Atlanta. We are sending away outfield prospect Estery Ruiz. We are getting right-handed pitchers Joel Pamps and Justin Yeager, along with Contreras, who made the all-star team as a designated hitter this past season, 278, 20 homers, 45 RBIs. Again, a bat that could really come in handy, according to President of Baseball Operations Matt Arnold. I don't kind of weigh any verdicts, you know, until we get much closer to opening day, but always want to note any kind of activity and wonder if you see anything especially positive or not in something like that.
It just seems so Brewers right now in this era. They kind of move these pieces around. They bring in some younger players who are not quite to arbitration. And I saw a major baseball writer who I follow on social media say that the Brewers are going to petition the National League to get add another designated hitter, because apparently Contreras is not the most wonderful signal caller. But then Brewer fans say, "Well, we'll make him better." That's what the Brewers do. We're going to make him better. And it just feels like, again, this is an era where you have a once in a generation set of pitchers, and they just kind of fiddling around the edges. But at the same time, I said this because this popped up during my show yesterday, that the Brewers are paying Christian Yelich to be that superstar that he's not right now.
Exactly.
And it's difficult to add another superstar salary for Milwaukee.
Funny, coincidentally, there's a Twitter account that goes by the handle Yelich Was Robbed. And after this trade, they posted what they call the updated J.J. Hardy trade tree. I thought it was fascinating that they start with J.J. Hardy, and we got Carlos Gomez and Mike Fiers for him. And then as the years went by, those two are gone now, but we got Josh Hader, Adrian Hauser, and some others, you know, as a result. And then that led to a new group of players, which included Asturi Ruiz, who we're now sending away for these three players. I don't know that I've ever seen a trade tree like that before. I guess trying to make the point the J.J. Hardy trade was good in the long run for the Brewers, although, again, I don't know that everybody would necessarily agree.
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing about it. The Brewers are just, I just don't know. I wish I had more of a feel. I mean, obviously, looking at what Contreras did for Chicago, I mean, for Atlanta, you know, it's a solid pickup. But are they better because, you know, they're flipping one of the guys in the Hader trade? I have a hard time believing it.
Yeah. And again, that's part of the magic, if you will, of small market baseball is sometimes you're pleasantly surprised and you have to live for those moments. What have you been talking about both on your afternoon show and in the evenings when you're covering prep sports up in North Central Wisconsin?
I'm just in a big circle right now. I come in, I prep my show, I do my show, I go do games, I go to bed, I wake up. Earlier on Tuesdays, I might add to talk to you, and then I just do it all over again. It's a busy time. You know, we're into high school basketball and hockey. Wausau West won their 16th straight Marathon Cup tournament, which is pretty amazing. I mean, I wish I could explain how amazing that is, because it's not a cupcake tournament, but 16 years in a row, because that's the tournament where all the Marathon County high schools get together, West, Everest, East, and Mosinee. And it's a huge tournament. It's why I missed you and the rest of the folks over at the party Saturday night. I was doing Marathon Cup hockey. Also, I've been to, you know, I got an interesting guest today, Gwendolyn Jones. She's from New Beginnings for Refugees here in Central Wisconsin. I think it's an incredibly important topic these days. And I'm going to learn a lot myself here this afternoon at 2:15. And those are the kind of guests I've been trying to get. These local folks who are doing important things that deserve to have a voice be heard. And looking forward to talking to her for the first time this afternoon at 2:15 on the program.
All right. And then we also have that winter storm we're kind of keeping our eye on. And, you know.
Yeah, I'll be talking plenty of that, because it's the first time that we're really going to have one of those big ones here this winter. And in fact, during the course of the sale, we kind of lost our snowplow service. So I've been spending a little time setting up the snowplow service to make sure that tomorrow and Thursday that I don't get caught in a snowdrift, because that has happened in our parking lot in the past.
Oh, it's happened for a lot of us who work in small radio stations, that's for sure. So good luck with that, Chad. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a great show today.
You bet. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you later. And that'll do it for us as well. You can follow us all day long, Up North News WI on socials, upnorthnewswi.com, where you can get our daily newsletter. And you can follow me, Pat Kreitlow, Up North on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow on Twitter, and moving to post as well. All right. Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign tomorrow. Earl Ingram next in Waukesha. Stephanie Miller in Madison. Todd Alba for the rest of you. Have a great day.